Sometimes the hardest part about suffering from mental health issues is battling the stigma attached to it. Even terms such as issues, illness, diagnosis, all refer to something wrong with the brain, how we process, think, evaluate, respond. After talking to Aide Kuza, a founding member of California Youth Connection and a consultant for Youth in Mind, outside of a coffee shop in Richmond, California, it was apparent just how little is done, especially for youth, dealing with others' perceptions of their mental health status.
My name is Aide Kuza. When I was 15 years old, I was homeless, and then at 16, I went into foster care, and I was introduced to an organization that had yet begun, Foster Youth Connection, sorry, because now it's called California Youth Connection. So, and they just brought some young people together to talk about the changes that needed to happen, or our perspective, not even the changes, but our perspective on the foster care system, also with developing the organization. So we were part of creating the bylaws and all of the kind of technical stuff at the age of 16, 17, which was really exciting. And I think that that just propelled me into a life of advocacy. My name is after a Cuban revolutionary, and so I think it's in my blood. But because I have those personal experiences, I think that that's why I was attracted to mental health, foster care, children and youth. So.
Youth in Mind partners up with another campaign, Stomp Out Stigma. The campaign's mission is to end stigma from local, community perspectives and give safe space for people to share their voices via photos, videos, and community dialogues. This allows the youth to seize the power away from the diagnosis and back to what they decide to show the world. It allows them to control the dialogue.
I think also the thing about Youth in Mind is that there's a lot of flexibility. So even though we do have like a structure to our conferences and we do have some accountability measures just because you're there, because you want to make a change. If somebody's not feeling well, if somebody is triggered, if somebody is needs to excuse themselves and take care of themselves and focus on their wellness, that's something that we actually promote and don't discourage. So, and we will challenge sometimes, like, you know, so are you going because you stayed out too late and you need to go take a nap and, you know, like, so can you make a better choice tomorrow? But sometimes that's not even the conversation. Sometimes the conversation is just like, you know, what does wellness look like to you and what can we do tomorrow to make this even a better day?
The goal of both of these campaigns is to effectively advocate for change when it comes to youth and mental health issues. And problems arise when the policymakers are not always willing to truly listen to someone who's been diagnosed with an illness.
I often sit in policy meetings and I know that the youth voice is wanted, but it's not necessarily, I can't really explain it, just not honored in a way that I feel that is really important for the work that we're doing. So, because sometimes it's hard to hear. Sometimes it's raw. Sometimes it comes in the form of somebody yelling at the group because they're so frustrated with what's being said, and or coming in maybe not, quote-unquote, dressed appropriately, or, you know, experiencing the side effects of their medication, and those things are uncomfortable for people. So
sometimes the best method of advocating change, especially for youth, is when they realize that the people put in place to help them, to understand them, are as lost as the rest of us when it comes to understanding mental health problems. There is so little public awareness and so much is based on individual needs that it can be very difficult in defining a catch-all solution. Kuza believes the best advocacy comes from simple dialogue.
I think when young people speak directly from their heart, but not where they spill their heart out on the table, when they speak from their heart about solutions that either would have worked for them or could have worked for them or did work for them, that's been what I've seen as, and we call that strategic sharing. I think also having an audience that's ready to hear the voice of people who have been most impacted by the system. It's, you know, it's important to do the baby steps of prepping people on the issue, but I think where the most work gets done is when the folks are ready to go into action and they just need some guidance, and that guidance comes directly from people who have been impacted by the system.
And it's not just the policymakers who have trouble understanding youth who face these kind of difficulties, but everyone they potentially come in contact with, leaving each social interaction a potential traumatizing experience.
I think young people, especially in foster care, or if they've experienced some form of trauma, there's just this immediate reaction to label and diagnose and medicate that doesn't allow the natural process for healing. And so then young people transition into adulthood and may not have the same medical access and stuff and resources available to them, and they still have the same emotional issues that they're dealing with because they haven't been able to heal from those traumas. I think that wellness is a big issue, like really owning that, you know, it's okay to take care of yourself, and that loving yourself is something that doesn't always come natural, that, you know, it's something that takes time and just being gentle with oneself through the process. I think young people have expressed in our organization, one of the biggest challenges is that expectation of transitioning from being like dependent, whether within a system or in their household, to then being what's called independent, but there's no such thing as independent. So how do we form healthy relationships and bonds? And when you are kind of reacting to life from this traumatic state of, you know, protecting yourself because of traumas and stuff like that. So how do you move through that for healthy relationships?
There's no such thing as independent. Not when you're a member of society. Not when you have to function in situations that depend on whether or not your rent is going to be paid, or your electricity stays on, or even if you need to make a doctor's appointment. What might seem like necessary and even simple tasks for the rest of us can be debilitating for those with mental health problems.
We use the word independence, but culturally, I think that that varies for folks that, you know, some families, there's not that nuclear family. There's extended family is your connection. You live in the household, you know, with multiple people, but we have this kind of mantra of, oh, you have to be independent. But even in quote-unquote independence, you depend on the boss who's going to hire you for the job that you're going to pay your rent for, you know, like, and you have to learn how to interact with them in order to survive. So so that's what I mean, that really teaching relationship building and that workforce development, really focusing on relationship building as opposed to, like, you know, did you dot your T, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's.
Kuza also believes that the problems do not just stem from those too stubborn to listen, but also the ones who end up hiring foster youth as a way to pad their organization as good karma trophies on the wall. But it is also so much more than that. Every person who plays a part in a youth's life with mental health issues is part of the problem, but they are also part of the solution.
But for me personally, what I've been witnessing, just really since I was 16, the last 25 years, is the whole peer kind of advocate or peer advisor or peer positions are often tokenized or underutilized and overutilized at the exact same time. So there's this overdependence on, oh, we need somebody with experience to be in there, so we're just going to place them in there. But they're the bottom of the totem pole. They're the only ones paid hourly. They're, you know, the expectations for their professionalism is high, and yet the support for really getting them through a job that can be re-traumatizing because they're revisiting issues that, you know, they have faced with the young people that they're working with. And I just feel like there has to be something different that can be done to support that movement. And there's incredible organization. There's peers in Oakland that does incredible work on this. So it's not that there's not people out there doing the work. It's just, I think the way the funding comes in, maybe. I don't even want to go into, like, who the cause is, because I don't think it's that simple. I just think it's more about honoring experiential knowledge as much, if not more, than a college degree. And I think that we don't have that.
What it comes down to is the need for constant dialogue and conversation, asking the questions, what does wellness look like to you? How can we help you? What works and what doesn't work for you? What can we do tomorrow to make it a better day for you? For Chronicle of Social Change, I'm Teddy Lederer.